Maybe in particular, welcome Honorable Self. We have missed you and we're happy to have you back here and hope you have been doing some good work elsewhere. Honorable Willenbach, I already welcomed you yesterday, so don't have to worry today. Let's also welcome the public protector and her team and the members of the media. We will also offer the public protector an opportunity to introduce their team that will be participating in this session. See, the deputy public protector is here as well. You are most welcome. Without further ado, may I call on the public protector to greet you and introduce the team.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Dr. Motsepe. Good morning, Honorable members of the Justice and Correctional Services Follow Committee. We thank you for this opportunity to engage you on our strategic plan for the year 2015 going forward. With me is the Deputy Health Protector, Advocate Kevin Malunga. Next to him is my new CEO or Chief Executive Officer, Dr. Maria de Gaulle. Welcome officially to the Public Protector team, Dr. Tutan. Next to the CEO is our new Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Kennedy Kafosa. Welcome to you, Chief. Joining us for the first time is the new Public Protector representative, Western Cape, who was the Public Protector representative in the Free State, Ms. Slay Fissel. Welcome to Western Cape, Ms. Fissel. And the rest of the Public Protector team are the following. Our business process engineer, who is currently also acting as the Chief of Staff in the private office, Ms. Avril Akers. Our acting spokesperson, Mr. Upa Sehalwe. The head in the CEO office, who is also responsible for our strategy and was our acting CEO until recently, Mr. Lucas Zedek. And our parliamentary liaison manager, who we introduced last time, Ms. Benita Young. We cherish this opportunity, honorable members, to engage you on our strategic plan and budget for the year ahead. We will be doing two short presentations over a period of about 30 minutes. A short overview by myself as the head of the Public Protector South Africa, a main presentation of our strategy by the Chief Executive Officer, Dr. Maria de Gaulle, and a very brief presentation on the resources covering the budget and the human resources by our Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Kwasa. The presentation is going to cover the headings that you can see in the overview of the presentation.
Can I just say from the outset that we have allocated 2 hours. We'll give you 1 hour and then give the members another hour for engagement. So you can bear that in mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. We did try to get information in advance so that we can prevent the cutting in the middle of the presentation, but thank you for that information. The overview of the presentation, honorable members, is the following. you again, Honourable Chairperson. As I was saying, Honourable Members, we value this opportunity to present before you. This opportunity, Honourable Members, is the closest my team has to a budget vote. We therefore take it very seriously and, of course, use this opportunity not only to engage with you as the parliamentary committee we have been assigned to, but we use this opportunity to engage with Parliament in line with our responsibility to account to Parliament in terms of Section 181.5 of the Constitution. But also taking into account Parliament represents the people of South Africa, we take the solemn moment not only to engage with you, but also to engage with the people of South Africa. Our presentation is going to cover the following, Honourable Members. The introductory remarks by myself, strategic overview. We will talk very briefly about our key performance highlights for the year we have just concluded. We'll then take you very briefly through our strategic plan for the year 2015 to the year 2020. So we'll take you through the synergies we are sought to achieve between our strategic priorities and the national priorities. We'll remind you our vision and mission. We will also take through our strategic objectives for the next 5 years and give you an overview of our program. Honourable Members, will then take you through our annual performance plan for the year 2015-16. And then, lastly, as I indicated earlier, we will end with indication to you what resources have been given to us by government to pursue these strategic priorities. And those resources will talk to the budget, will talk to the structure, and then will then talk to the people and how we've deployed them between those directly involved with investigations and those supporting the investigative process. Honourable Members, the Public Protector Strategic Vision 2020 remains the anchor or lodestar of the activities of the Public Protector South Africa. You'll remember, Honourable Members, that Public Protector Vision 2020 was adopted by this Parliament at the beginning of 2010. That happened after a very long process of consultations between my office and the people of South Africa. By the time we came to this Parliament, we had debated what really should be the vision of the Public Protector of South Africa and what should be the strategic priorities and objectives of that office and how should each discharge its responsibilities. That culminated in the adoption of that strategic vision, which we call Public Protector Vision 2020. But obviously meant that it was going to be a 10-year vision. That remains our vision. Just to remind you, in strategic plan, page 9, that vision is to be effective, accessible, and impartial organization that rights administrative wrongs and promotes good governance in state affairs. Key to that are accessibility, effectiveness, and righting administrative wrongs while promoting good governance in state affairs. Our organizational purpose, which was adopted in 2013, also remains the same. That organizational purpose, which we presented to this Parliament without any reservation, was to be a conscience of the state, to act with integrity and fairness. Our strategic focus, Honourable Members, remains anchored in balancing three priorities, which are accessibility, rigor, and speed. Our aim is to ensure that we are thorough in our investigations in order to achieve just and relevant outcomes. done in pursuit of our constitutional mandate. Which constitutional mandate derives from Section 181 and 2 of the Constitution, which states that the Constitution establishes the public sector of South Africa as an independent institution whose mandate is to support and strengthen constitutional democracy. Section 182 specifically says the public sector has the power as regulated by legislation to investigate any conduct in state affairs and in the public administration in any sphere of government that is alleged or suspected to be improper or to result in any impropriety or prejudice, to report on that conduct and to take appropriate remedial action. I now go into our strategic overview, which is basically what do we have in store for you and the people of South Africa in the next 5 years, but focusing on the next 12 months. Honourable members, about 5 days or so ago, I was approached by a student from one of our universities. He came to our offices and told us, I have been wronged by an institution in state affairs. I need your assistance. If you don't assist me, I will not be able to write a test this coming Saturday. And if I'm not able to write the test this coming Saturday, I will not be able to pass my degree next year. Next year, I'll be doing my final year. This year is my third year. The test I'm supposed to write is for a course that I failed last year. If I fail it again this year, that would have meant that I have failed it twice and I will not be allowed to complete my degree. I would then have to re-register as a law student when I'm supposed to be going to do my fourth year LLB. The reason I will not be able to write a test this Saturday is because my university says that I was supposed to write test 2 after writing test 1, and if I was not going to write test 2, I should have informed my university within 3 days that I will not be available to write test 2. The reason I was not able to write test 2 or to inform them that I'm not going to write test 2 was because I was away from university thinking I had been suspended. I was sitting at home because I was avoiding being physically suspended from the university and embarrassed in front of my colleagues. I'm a student that is funded by a municipality, and the municipality takes its time to pay the fees for my university. Last year, when my municipality had not paid my fees, a member of the university administration came to class, dragged me in front of my colleagues, and told me I'm suspended for non-payment of fees. I was hugely embarrassed. And to avoid the same happening, after writing test one, the university called me and told me that I have paid my fees, and if the fees are not paid by Monday, I will be suspended. When Monday came, the fees had not yet been paid, and I had checked with the municipality. I then decided not to go to university. I assumed that the university would know that I'm suspended, and therefore I will obviously not write test 2. It turns out that the university was not aware of that, and the university now says I can't write test 2, test 3, because of this matter. We immediately called the early resolution team, found the university, found the dean of that university, that particular
Before you proceed, don't you think that you are giving ale pops in a sitting like this?
Honourable members, can I really just be allowed to present as I do speech? And then I'll make the point. And can this House just allow us, as ministers are allowed, to finish our presentation in 1 hour? And then when it's finished, we have the conversation. I sincerely make that request. Can that be the claim?
I have a duty to allow you. But
thank
I just say, what you are doing is giving a report which
I request that I be allowed to present a writing seat. When ministers choose to talk about what is done on outreach, the president chooses to talk about any interface with us, they are allowed. I am just asking that let's do this. Can I then proceed, Honourable Member? Let's just conclude that story. So that the moment is not stolen and then lessened.
No, I think it may be incorrect that we equate this meeting with those ministers and the president, because this meeting has been called for a specific purpose. So to take stories of some children that are not within the line of the mandate, it may be wasting time already.
Honourable Member, I am going to finish the story and then make the lesson. Honourable Members, as I was saying, we immediately called our early resolution team and proceeded to contact the university concerned. We found the dean of the faculty concerned, and the dean was very helpful, and we got the student to write. So we got a written undertaking that the student was going to be allowed to write the test and the rest is going to be processed. Why did I tell the story before I was interrupted? I'm telling you the story because this session is the strategic overview of Public Protector South Africa. And I have indicated to this Parliament that our vision remains the same. Our broad strategic objectives remain the same. Our organizational purpose remains the same. And how we approach this case of, I will call, Mr. M, is in line with that vision. That vision is to right administrative wrongs of the state whilst promoting good governance in state affairs. In that moment, the early resolution part was concluded. But as part of promoting good governance, stage two is to find out what is the systemic problem within government that is causing students, such as Ms. M, to find themselves being dragged out of class because their fees have not been paid. How many, like Mr. M, are deregistering for universities because they cannot handle that humiliation? How many in one university that I spoke to about listening are sleeping in public toilets because they do not have fees? They don't have money to pay for accommodation until the institutions in government that are supposed to pay their fees do not pay on time. Lastly, once we found out why that payment has not been made, as part of our strategic vision, we also make sure that if money is that we assigned to projects like this end up paying for things that were not planned for in government, we help identify that and we help flow back those monies. That is the vision, Honourable Members, that the team I lead of the Public Protector South Africa has. It's the same vision we've heard since 2010. It's the same vision that informs our operation. And it's the same version, Honourable Members, that will inform the program that we're presenting to you and that you have given us a budget to pursue. What has changed, Honourable Members, by presenting to you? I've indicated that our vision remains the same. Our strategic priorities remain the same. We have realigned and re-engineered our business processes so that we can achieve more with less. Our Chief Executive Officer is going to be talking to that as to what is it that we have realigned. What I can say for my son are three things that we have changed. The first one is we're rolling back our outreach services. Instead of doing broad stakeholder consultations, we are moving to social media and also leveraging stakeholder events so that we speak on their platform rather than creating platforms. And secondly, engaging in more direct contact with stakeholders in government. We've also channeled our resources towards building internal complaint resolution mechanisms within government. We've written to cabinet, to ask cabinet, to allow that every government department should have a dispute resolution mechanism that is our representative, and we'll train that facility. So that, for example, in this event, instead of the student calling us from far away and risking the possibility that they may not find me, they may not find the team here because it was a date just before the public holiday, that there is an internal dispute resolution mechanism, such as an ombudsman in other countries, that resolves this process. We've reached into cabinet. Lastly, we've re-engineered our own business structures to make sure that is most energy, for example, service delivery and early resolution are now one branch that is overseen by the Deputy Public Protector, whilst I focus on the non-ombudsman functions, which is ethics, integrity, anti-corruption, etc., under the Good Governance and Integrity branch. Lastly, honourable members, just to talk very briefly about why we feel confident that we can move to the next level if we are re-engineering. It is because of the achievements we have made in the past year and some of the challenges we've encountered in that process. Three strategic priorities inform our processes in this regard. Regarding accessibility, for example, we have a constitutional responsibility to be accessible to all persons and communities. And in regards to that, we reached about 19 million. So in terms of people being aware of the existence of the office, more and more people are aware of the existence of the office. The challenge is to make sure that beyond awareness, services are available when they need it. We have rolled back our footprint in terms of physical offices and are focusing temporarily on mobile offices. On investigations, we concluded 21,170 cases against a load of 29,303 cases. You will note that on the workload, that in terms of the number of cases that we concluded, that is less than last year. But if you open those boxes, a lot of the cases we concluded were systemic in nature or multiple investigations. We're focusing on ensuring that not only do we resolve the complaints at hand, but we assist governments to identify the fault lines or the patterns of improper conduct in state affairs. Currently, we have noticed that there are undue delays, there is unlawful and improper prejudice, and then the tail end, you get the kind of misconduct that involves corruption, unlawful or improper enrichment, and unethical conduct. At the level of good governance, we have picked up fault lines in respect of executive privileges, and we picked up also that there is a need to identify a common interpretation of the executive ethics code, and we've opened up dialogue so that we can engage in that particular process. And so far, we have met with a cabinet committee of about 7 ministers that have been assigned to engage with us. Honourable members, thank you again for this privilege to address you on our vision, which remains on course, and the tactical changes that we've made in response to our achievements and the challenges we've picked up. I will now hand over to Dr. Du Toit, our Chief Executive Officer, to take us through the nuts and bolts of our strategic plan.
Thank you, Public Protector. Honourable Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, good morning. It's a real privilege to be here. And I must say that close to 2 months that myself and the Chief Financial Officer have been at the public protector. This is a busy month. I think we also got a couple of grey hairs in the meantime. But I believe that I want to thank the portfolio committee, also the other stakeholders supporting the mandate of the public protector, because it became clear that we really had a number of highlights as a country in our approach towards anti-corruption, impropriety, maladministration and the like. I think the basis of our strategic plan has been already put by our public protector himself. And if I start with our presentation, just as a cornerstone of our mandate, going back to Section 181 and 182, just reflecting on the fact that we have a threefold mandate, and we committed to that. Firstly, to investigate allegations of impropriety in state conduct and in the administration of our government, all the different spheres. But secondly, to report on such conduct. And then thirdly, to take remedial action. I think the reflection on that internally is very important to us, to know how we go forward with the existing capacity, with the existing focus, and also the support that we envisage. Honourable Chairperson, the actual Public Protector Act, as we know it, assists us greatly in identifying in the revision of our priorities how we can focus our efforts and streamline our processes. I would like to especially highlight the investigation of maladministration as highlighted in that particular act, the abuse of power, the abuse of state resources, and then more importantly, the way that we need to resolve or at least attempt to resolve disputes, either through mediation, negotiation, or then conciliation. I believe many of the attempts that we have had quite a number of successes in the past year were mandated through that very important issue. Chairperson, that doesn't stop there. We are not an island. We may derive our economy as a public entity from our constitution, but we support the national priorities of this country. The policy priority already identified by our President during his State of Nations address very clearly supported the anti-corruption attempt that we have introduced in this country. We are linking it with our National Development Plan and the very important emphasis on zero tolerance to corruption. We need to empower our citizens at the end of the day to hold public officials to account. But for that, Chairperson, we need a resilient system to ensure that the public protector has the resources and the credibility to investigate any allegation, and that when that particular investigation has been concluded, that there is an action, an execution. I would like to move to the particular public protector program. We have had a consistent implementation of our vision and mission as supported by Parliament, and we are very grateful for that. In alignment of our programs, the very first important one, of course, will be the administration. And when talking to our administration on slide 11, I believe, we would try and attempt the creation of an effective and efficient organization, ensuring optimal performance. I believe that once you have decided that there are not one but numerous priorities to address the social impact necessary for the country, you will always deal with a restrained budget. What we need is to try and align so that you have a credible implementation of your mandate on the one hand, and secondly, an accountable system of air spaces and management of air spaces. Program two would be the investigations themselves, of course, that being the core business of this entity. The importance of ensuring a prompt investigation of the allegations of improper conduct or prejudice, and then also the promotion of good governance. The third very important program that we have aligned, focusing on the outreach. Now, honourable members, you will remember that this House and Parliament, and also in the consultation process of all the stakeholders, already supported the outreach program. However, in the exercise of any outreach activity, it's very important that the basis of your objective is actually achieved. And in this particular case, it will all boil down to access. And access can be achieved through a number of activities. For us, the excellence in the actual investigation itself, the speedy recovery of any negativity in the particular municipality can be addressed. National and provincial support provided to the applicable regional offices, and accordingly that we can capacity this outreach program. Jefferson, that brings us to our annual performance plan, where we have now aligned our targeted performance objectives to a more quantifiable and qualitative approach. From a priority point of view, I would like to align the following thoughts. Firstly, emphasis on operational efficiency, the optimal utilization of our human resources, and an integrated approach to service delivery. If I can pause there for a moment. The existing human resource capacity at the public protector is constrained. We know that, we have debated that many times. What we now need is a fresh approach, how we can actually address the need within the investigation service so that you can maximally utilize those human resources. While you can have investigators qualified by a very specific skill base, also important is to say, how can we integrate those processes so that you can utilize that capacity optimally? Very important priority to us will be the coordination and cooperation between ourselves and also other Chapter 9 institutions. We are having a similar autonomous mandate, but it is important, Chairperson, that from a resource base, that the country can really ensure that they can think together, work together, and at the end of the time, deliver together. The involvement of Parliament, and I believe that is also highlighted by the public protector. It is important that we be provided an opportunity to also advise this oversight committee and Parliament specifically on those matters that can assist structures like this with its oversight responsibility. So that the actual tool that we have created as a nation can also utilize other oversight structures to implement those outcomes of our reports and our ideals. Currently, we are not having that many opportunities. Moving to the actual key project for 2015-16, Chairperson, we are aligning everything that we can to obtain an unqualified audit opinion. We are doing the checks and balances and implementing the necessary internal controls that also from a financial oversight perspective, we have a strong hold, and that the core will hold. In order for us to really have an effective organization from a core business point of view, we need to also develop a funding model and then balance that with an appropriate investigation load management model. When we look at our actual performance management and development system, the alignment also of our internal processes to address performance failures and also performance successes will be very important, so that we balance the actual activity and the measurement tool that we utilize, that it actually can support our objectives. Internal business processes, more talking to the administrative part of the institution, It is important, Jason, that we revisit maybe some challenges that we have encountered. Myself and the CFO actually going into analysis of that as having the privilege of being new, but also having a fresh look upon those. And at the end of the day, the importance of having a proper records management system, internally, externally, but also something to guide your decision making and ensure that you implement policies and procedures very consistently. We have had a total program budget for the whole of that program of 67.63 million. Given that takes us to the second program called Investigations. And within this particular program, we have identified three important strategic objectives. One being the prompt justice, including remedial action. Secondly, the promotion of good governance in the conduct of state affairs. And then also looking at our reporting format and the manner in which we also take the implementation of those reports forward. When we pause with regard to our fifth strategic objective, the prompt justice objective, then we also highlight the necessity to develop a caseload model. Now, not all cases will necessitate the same number of resources. I think that is quite clear. However, you need to also focus when you do identify particular priorities in cases to ensure that you do have the capacity to perform excellently in those investigations. Very important matter that we are all informed of is the increasing backlog of the organization. They are implementing stringent measures to have a target date of 30 December 2015 to attend to all cases. And when we attend to all cases, that can be summarized by saying that we do have non-jurisdictional matters referred to us and deal with that accordingly. And then also we do advise clients if there are other bodies that would be more appropriate. We need to enhance our referral methods. We need to make sure that we are responsibly tackling those priority cases that are brought to us by the normal system. When you look at access, as I indicated earlier, it is not only about reaching out. It is also about finalizing those cases that are sent to you and you are institutionally maybe not fast-tracking them to the best of your capabilities. We are attending to that and our efforts will be to increase our attempts in resolving disputes and our cases receiving our attention throughout our region. When we look at the litigation challenges that we are experiencing recently and also the increased litigation that we anticipate, it will be important that we also appoint a panel of legal experts and that we develop a quality assurance manual to support our own investigations and support following the investigation. When we deal with the promotion of good governance in the conduct of state affairs, we will continue to investigate and report on cases in terms of the Executive Members Ethics Act. We are attempting to finalize four quarterly reports on the implementation of our remedial action. I think it has been disputed. Sure.
Brought to my attention that they are generally sitting with members. Can we make sure that that does not happen? I think it may be that people don't know, so we're not blaming you. We're just correcting the situation. Yes, please.
thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Members, I will continue with the organization of the program to reflection, basically ending with the establishment of our complaint resolution mechanisms at identified health institutions. And something that will be extremely important, members of the committee, would be to ensure that there is an understanding of the roles, responsibilities within, and respect for the responsibilities within a particular state institution. It is for us to assist with regard to facilitation and negotiation to ensure that the particular claimant that approached us can be facilitated. I think our commitment lies there, and we would like to ensure that we investigate all possibilities in establishing procedures and mechanisms that can enhance that process. So that brings us to Program 3, which focuses on outreach, and as indicated, the accessibility to all persons and communities will be very important. Similarly, I think it is paramount that we ensure that we do not overpromise and underperform. We need to make sure that we can deliver what we promise. And for purposes of that, we either need to have quite a lot of increased funding, and I would love myself to elaborate on that. But then secondly, we are having a refocused approach to actually emphasize our initiatives in managing our mobile offices. For the present moment, that will be a priority for us, and one of the reasons, of course, will be the mobility. If you set up a fixed office, which is definitely also important, it has a certain number of expenses that you need to anticipate. If you have a mobile office, Jefferson, I think it is also important that we know that that does not come without costs. There are also a certain number of costs involved, and they immediately impact on your travel, your IT infrastructure, your telecommunications, and also your human resources. But having said that, I think the very important deliverables that you can undertake is that within your regions, within your provinces, you will be able to reach out. And how we do that, that will be part of our refocused approach. Then we would like to finalize the implementation of a comprehensive outreach program, not only talking about containment, but also addressing our stakeholders and the way that we are going to be able to collaborate and also address matters of national importance and collective. The total program budget for this particular program will be 7.6 million. Now, I just need to request that just let you reflect on that amount, 7.6 million, to address our beach. Then it is my sincere privilege, Chairperson, to hand over to my Chief Financial Officer so that he can elaborate on the budget allocations. Thank you.
I would like to highlight and also emphasize our gratitude for the 15 million additional allocation to the house, and also highlight the fact that the 15 million, while well received, and we are grateful for that, is far from meeting our resource constraints, as I will highlight that at a later stage, as it talks to capitalization of the approved structure and some of the operational investments, operational costs that the public to protect our life undertakes to fulfill its mandate. In 2016-17, we have 263.3 million, and 2017-18, we have 280.5 million. And in both cases, we have 20 million and 25 million respective additional allocation, and that basically talks to additional allocation for education, trainee, retaining the trainee program, and also for leases, and an additional 3 million in the outer years for the capacitation of the approved structure. The second slide basically talks about the breakdown of the same budget program, which the CEO has also highlighted. Program 1, which is administration, for 2015-16 we have 67 million. Program 2, we have 170 million, which is investigation. And program 3 is outreach, we have 7.6 million. And that has been extrapolated in the outer years for 7.1 for program for administration and 7.5.3 for 2017-18. And for program 2, investigations, in 2016-17, we have 183.4 million. And in 2017-18 for investigation, we have 186 million. For outreach program, which is program 3, in 2016-17, we have 8.1 million. And in 2017-18, we have 8.6 million. And that gives us a total budget over the MTF of 246 for 2015-16, 263 million for 2016-17, and 280 million for 2017-18. In terms of national treasury requirements, the same budgets are broken down into compensation of employees and goods and services. So this slide basically talks about the breakdown of the same budgets over the MTF for compensation of employees, which is salaries, and also for operational costs, which is goods and services. This slide talks to the breakdown of the same budgets over the MTF, over the economic classifications as required by the estimates of national expenditure, by national treasury. I will not go into details into each of the specific economic classifications. I think the members had time to engage on those figures, so I'll skip that for the sake of time. The budget priorities and some of the highlights of this budget is that this budget goes mainly to investigations, and approximately an amount of 170.8 million goes toward investigations. The funding of our service delivery points, which is head office and 9 provincial offices and 10 regional offices, amounts to 14.5 million, and also for funding of our stakeholder engagements. Just to highlight some of the challenges that the Office of the Public Protector is facing in terms of resource constraints, and our major constraints is basically the fact that we are not funded adequately, we are not resourced properly to explore, to carry out our mandate, especially with regards to capacitation of the approved structure and some of the operational costs that we would like to undertake. Given that background, in conclusion, I would like to leave this message with the House and the Honourable Members, especially with regards to our resource constraints. The first issue is that in terms of our approved structure, which was approved as far as 2009, we have 598 staff complement. That is the approved structure. And out of that 588, 322 staff are funded and filled. And that includes investigators and support staff, 142 for investigators and 180 for staff, support staff. The unfunded cost in the approved structure is the staff complement of 276 staff members with an estimated budget of 162 million. So already you can see that we are resource constrained in terms of implementing the approved structure which was approved by this House back in 2009. And the last point is the operational cost or investment that we would like to undertake in order to carry out our mandate, which is the capacitation of the call center to increase access, and that will require 2.1 million. Litigation, we need an amount of 10.5 million. The implementation of the case management system, we need 12 million to implement an electronic system of managing cases and also statistics. And to improve our footprint in terms of offices, we need 40 million. So altogether, we require 39 million just to implement the operational cost. So overall, if we have to implement the approved structure, which was approved by Parliament in consultation with National Treasury, PSA, and the Ministry of Finance, and also implementation of these operational costs, we need an amount of 200 million for us to carry out our mandate. So I'll conclude on that report and with that point, and thank you very much for the opportunity to present the budget for approval and also for noting. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Kawasa. Thank you, honorable members. That was the presentation from the Public Protector South Africa team. In conclusion, we remain anchored in Public Protector Vision 2020, which was approved by this Parliament after the people of South Africa were engaged. Our broad strategic objectives remain the same. We have made tactical changes to address, ensuring that we have more efficiency, and that we are more accessible, and that we are able to provide the people of South Africa with prompt justice whenever they have been wronged. We thank you for this opportunity. The last message from the CFO was that we've given you a budget based on the money that has already been allocated, and that is how we have provided for it. But in addition to that, we are asking this Parliament to consider giving us, or asking Treasury to give us, a baseline that is increased by 200 million, which is primarily informed by the structure that this Parliament approved, which structure gives us 598 people, while currently we only have a structure that is funded for 322 people. And the 15 million extra that we got, 7 million is for litigation, 8 million is for trainings. Even then, not for the 100 trainees that we started with, it will only be able to fund 80 trainees. Thank you for this opportunity.
Advocate Madosa, I said at the outset, in an attempt to assist, that we shouldn't be have not addressed any of the issues raised by the committee last year, as well as any of the issues raised by the Auditor General's report. And what is happening now is that we are reminded of the structure and the need for the structure, things that we were told last year, which means that this session has actually become meaningless. And what you have been doing is really to motivate, same motivation as last year. And then the CEO is also telling us about the plan, how things should be done, and also allocating to yourself additional responsibility to help Parliament and also helping government to set up dispute resolution committees before you really address the internal issues of the Office of the Public Protector. And I want to give you examples of the critical things which you should have addressed.
Chairperson? Sorry, I rise on a point of order, Chairperson. In terms of the rules of Parliament, I think you are using your power at this stage. You are to chair this meeting. Public Protector presented, as she said, as she deems fit. You are presenting at this stage a view of the committee which you have not consulted with the committee at all with. With all due respect, I think some of my colleagues differ, in that you accuse Public Protector of not addressing the issues raised last year, while I specifically noted quite a number of changes effected already by the CEO and the CFO. In addressing the issues raised not only by this committee but also the AG. So what I want to say, Chair, is that I don't think it's your purview now to take a matter, to talk to the Public Protector. You are to chair this meeting and allow members now to engage with the Public Protector.
Honourable Breitenbach and Honourable Horn, I am going to give you time to speak. And you must allow me time to speak. I'm chairing the meeting. I have prepared for this meeting and I have reported last year's report. All I'm saying is that the Office of the Public Protector is entitled to address us, but they must also address the concerns which were raised by the committee last year, and that has not happened. Honourable Bonga.
Yes, Chair. The Honourable Mkhuleni, I think what they are raising is just a waste of time, so you must proceed as you're proceeding. So I don't waste more time, and if they are referring us to rules, they must quote specific rules. They don't just make some blank thing about the rules. Which rule says the representative cannot make an overview of what we're coming, where of where we're coming from? I think they're just out of order. Proceed as if they've not said anything, Chair.
Honourable Breitenbach.
Chair, I ask not for the Honourable Bonga who addressed
the Don't address Honourable Bonga because he is in order.
I'm addressing you. I will
allow you to speak. Honourable Breitenbach,
you should chair the meeting.
Honourable Breitenbach, just behave, because I always give you time, and even today I'll give you time to speak, but also allow me to speak. Honourable Bonga has correctly said, you are referring to rules whose numbers you don't know, and I take the same view. Honourable Sartre.
Chair, I want to align myself with my colleagues, and the presentation today is of the strategic plan and budget. No other institution had to ask
to reflect on last year's report. Why are you asking Public Protector? They have come, they've presented a strategic plan and a budget. That is the purpose of this meeting. And I ask you, Chair, to allow them to us to now engage. I'm also concerned and listen about the time that is allocated, not only to the Public Protector, but also to the Human Rights Commission. So I fully align myself with my colleagues, and I think that we should give the Public Protector the due opportunity they have presented. They have, for time purposes, have not gone through every slide, which they have presented in full here. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Sir, I would have agreed with you if you just made your point and not align with people who are out of order. You see, I said what I said because their presentation boils down to asking for more money. And if you need to manage a bigger budget, you must have evidence that you have the capacity to do so. And for them to prove that capacity, they should have addressed the issues raised last year. Now, without having addressed those issues, how are we going to be persuaded that if we give the 200 rand more, they will be able to manage that budget? So you were right, just alignment was not right. Honorable Majake and Honorable Mpungwan.
Thank you. There's something that is worrying about this committee today. I don't know why. And why does it appear if there is that move of trying to defend the Public Protector? They are here to present, and they will actually talk for themselves. Let the members express their views and opinions on what has been presented. And I think it's...
Self-respect and respect for others should guide this meeting. If Honorable Horn and Bredenbach want other members to respect them, they must also respect their members. I only recognize Honorable Magaki to speak, not anybody to howl.
Thank you, Chairperson. My view is that let's continue. The Chairperson on the podium making his comments and observation about the report that has been presented. Give us the opportunity to comment on the report, no matter what you think could be right or wrong. That's why I'm actually saying all this that is actually happening is foreign to the committee. We've never seen members really dividing in between the presentation of the chairperson and saying, no, stop, don't actually say things like that. You are now being accusing somebody. Even if the chairperson might be out of line, allow him to have his say so that we can actually have a meeting that has got order. And my plea is that let's allow the chairperson from what you are actually presenting to continue and finish. Whether he's right or wrong, let him continue. And other members, of course, everybody sitting here is going to get his opinion, his or her opinion, to make input into the same process. Let that be order.
I'm almost covered by that. I was going to say, honorable members, we need to respect ourselves, particularly in front of the public. The honorable chair not only is a chair, he's also a member of this committee, has a right to talk. Please, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I beg for progress. I think you were on the podium. Thank you.
Honourable members, I think Honourable Swart put the correct question to say I didn't ask other committees the same question that I'm asking the Office of Public Protector. The reason is as follows. This committee wanted the Public Protector's Office to take effective steps to prevent irregular expenditure, wrong procurement processes, and to take disciplinary actions where necessary, and to put in place a proper IT policies and procedures, and to address the fact that the office was technically insolvent when we met last year. Now, if we don't get answers as to what has been done about these matters, how do we sit here and agree that we need 200 million more when we cannot be persuaded that we'll be able to manage the budget. So I want to do something out of the ordinary, Honorable Advocate Madonsela, to give you 15 more minutes to address things that this committee asked you to address last week. So I'm giving you more time, 15 more minutes.
Maybe what we can do in the future to avoid this, when we had the BVR report in October, the Department of Justice responded in January to the issues, and maybe we can request other institutions with similar issues to respond earlier, because as and I'm not disagreeing with you necessarily, and it's up to the public protector to what degree she wants to respond, but I'm just concerned about time with this meeting in general, and I think that let's maybe just learn a lesson as well that we need to engage the same issues that were raised yesterday with the SIU. Regrettably, it seems that we are only able to meet with these institutions twice a year, and I think they will agree that we need to meet more often. I'm not disagreeing with you because obviously the issue of the budget of 200 million is a substantial issue that we need to engage, and the public protector, I'm sure, will try and persuade us that it is needed and what the compelling aspects are. So let's proceed, but maybe just bear in mind the Department of Justice responded in January to our October issues, and that might be a way.
With respect, Honorable Charles, you are making a valid point. The difficulty is that we are discussing a budget proposal, and there are certain preconditions which would enable us to consider their request. So I'm giving them more time to speak to the real issues, not commentary.
Yeah, thanks. I think we are correct. We're correct because the last time we raised all these issues that we're raising, we also give them time. I think we should give them a lot of time that maybe within 3 months come back with a turnaround plan. We did. So that's why I was engaged. I'm tempted to say generally they must go back and come back next week and address these issues, because I don't see how I'm going to pass from this line of questions that I have.
And that is, churches, what we allowed all other institutions was that if they didn't have the time or they weren't prepared to answer now, we enabled them to answer in writing. And I would ask that also be accorded to the public protector.
This is a different matter. You know, a report does not address essential issues that we should deal with in this city. That's why I'm tempted to agree with the Honorable Bolger, that I think we need to give them more time to go and prepare. We will also assist by pointing at areas which must be covered, because this report defeats the purpose of this meeting. Honorable Regenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Today, I align myself with Mr. Schwartz. We've given every other institution the opportunity to go away and answer unanswered questions in writing. Just last week, you sent the National Prosecuting Authority away with reams of unanswered questions, even though there was plenty of time for him to answer them. So I don't see why the public protector shouldn't be accorded the same courtesy, A. And B, I would prefer for us to be able to put questions to the public protector and his team in order to determine which issues they are unable to answer before we tell them to go away and come back in 3 months' time or next week.
What is it? I think this thing is a skill, and Honorable President by us have that skill. Because the issue that we're raising here, simple, the reason why also they're not listening is they always converse with Honorable Howard, they just talk without listening to either the chairperson or our contribution. The point of the matter here is that we're saying, under NPA, we never met NPA and left NPA as a target. We met the public protector's office. We said within 3 months, address the following issues. And there are a lot of issues that we've raised. So today, the report comes, it does not address any of those issues. So it's a different matter from all these other institutions. So we can't use that as an example, Chair.
We are saying the report of the public protector is substantially deficient of what needs to be addressed. And because this is an important institution, we want to give them time to go and do a proper job. And that is our time as this parliament. We have time next Wednesday. It's not a question of filling the gaps like in respect of the other committees where it was a gap here and there. Here, I think the substance of the report does not meet our expectation for this session. So what's wrong in giving them time to go and prepare well? We will guide them as to what is decisions in the report. Honorable Hon.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think it's exactly that, and I've been accused now of not listening, but it seems as if some of us were not listening or reading while the public protector presented. My argument is simply this. This presentation in respect of the budget differs in no substantial way from any of the other presentations we've accepted as a committee during this budget cycle. So the challenge is really, and I know this is eating up time, rather than afterwards crafting very cleverly questions as to what was not addressed in this budget presentation, I think the ANC must come clean here and now and here and tell us what is missing in respect of the budget. It is quite clear that it is unfair also to expect of the public protector to now make this a VRR succession report. This is not what the aim of this meeting is. As I say, and maybe they will have the answers, I've already picked up on quite a number of changes effected in the institution to address what we raised with the Office of the Public Protector last year. The mere fact that there's a CEO and a CFO appointed is, for example, already a successful conclusion to some of the issues raised. But that simply is not what we are here for today. So unless the members of the ANC can show here and now what is missing from the presentation, there's no reason why we should send them away like naughty school children.
Honorable Horn, with due respect to you, not as ANC, but as the chairperson of the committee, I started to indicate the shortcomings, and I also offered them 15 minutes to address the shortcomings, and you said that was wrong. Now you are calling on the members of the ANC to do what I was busy doing as a chairperson, and you have wasted even half of the 15 minutes that I had given. Can you see that you are just taking this committee backward? Honorable Majaki.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to make a follow-up on what Honorable Horn is actually saying, mentioning that the ANC has positioned that we're not operating as ANC or DA in this committee, we're operating as a committee of parliament that comprises of all political parties in parliament. And if we were to take the line of the ANC versus the DA in terms of the operation of the Office of the Public Protector, I think when you speak, then we must identify ourselves. I'm so-and-so in this committee of the DA. I'm so-and-so in this committee of the ANC. So that it becomes very clear as to what's actually happening. In all other entities, when we actually have them presenting, we never mention the names of the political parties. They come to present to a portfolio committee of parliament. For what reason today we have to actually then start lining ourselves, our political parties, before we actually manage to comment about the operations of the Office of the Public Protector? That baffles me. But one thing that I hear is that we're actually taking a lot of time. We need to actually decide as to what line we are taking when it comes to this matter. Already what is contentious, Public Protector? The fact that when we were here previously, there's a whole list of issues that were raised. From my side, I remember I said, we need to have a clear idea of what types of cases you are handling. Give us a list of cases, the number of cases, the types of cases, to allow us to understand the locations of your office and how you prioritize cases.
Honorable Majaki, Honorable Horn and Rayton are not listening. They are laughing. They are having a conversation. So don't be surprised if they don't repeat what you said.
Okay. So the point I was making is that the public protector is here. and maybe to help us move forward, because we can't actually continue with the to and fro. We need to actually decide, are we continuing to engage on this report, or are we not continuing? Do we feel what we've submitted is enough for us in the position to manage to make input into this project that, by the way, as a committee, we should support or not support? So we need to manage to go beyond it. So what you need to understand is, what has happened to the request that was actually put forward? Which is supposed to come in a form of a report from the Office of the Public Protector. And I think what actually becomes difficult is that even if you had not responded, whatever was queried previously could have been made part of this report. And I think that's what actually limits this report. But you are here, Public Protector. You want to comment about it. The report that we expected to receive from your office, as to what has happened to it, as to when you actually think you can manage to present that kind of information. Because this is what is the task of the main problem now.
With due respect to those that raise their hands, I've noted you, but I just want to say something before you speak. I'm not the chairperson of the ANC. I'm the chairperson of the committee. So, Honorable Jackie, you are right. We're sitting here as members of the committee, and each and every one of us is free to express their opinion, and we'll deal with those opinions on their merits or demerits. So we don't need any further clarifications. But before I take your hands, I think it's quite clear that there is a view which says we need more information from the Public Protector's Office to enable us to consider their requests. And there's a view which says, no, let us deal with them like the others. The others are not in the same position. So, Public Protector, I'm prepared to give you 10 minutes. Your other 5 minutes was wasted by the situation that arose. The question is one. Don't you think it will be fair to you in your office that we give you time to go and look at the concerns we raised last year, respond to them, because those responses will help us to seriously consider your request. And also, there was a request that you give us a comprehensive report on the caseload, including the number and type of cases being investigated and when this was received and finalized, the point that Honorable Mataki is making. So you really haven't complied with these basic requirements which would assist us to assist you. So don't you think we should give you another day if you are in all interest? Okay. Address us on that.
Thank you. Honorable members, I thank you for this opportunity. On 14th April this year, shortly after receiving a letter from the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, I wrote back to the Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. I acknowledge receipt of the letter. In my last paragraph, this was my request to the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. In order to maximize our engagement and avoid not having ample time to respond to important questions by honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, please, could you indicate how much time I will have to present on 29 April 2015, and how much time would be dedicated to the discussion? If there is any specific structure the committee prefers to the presentation of the strategic plan, I would appreciate your thoughts before I submit the PowerPoint presentation to ensure that there are no discomforting changes on the day of the presentation. I did that because 3 times during my appearance here, wasn't in the middle of the presentation, there are interruptions, and then the presence of this or that and that. I've been public protector.
Just intolerant. I think let her make a case. Maybe there are more merits in what she's saying than what we're saying.
I've been public protector for 6 years, honorable members. I appeared before Parliament for 2 events. In October I present the annual report, which is about performance outcomes of this office. And in spite of this, I have no difficulties. These problems have started since last year. And I was avoiding that when I wrote, so that I knew exactly what are preferences as opposed to the tradition. My understanding was here, I am here to present to the committee a summary of the strategic plan. It is not the annual report, and the annual report will be presented in October. That was my understanding. But my presentation here would be to give the committee a summary of what is in the strategic plan that we are asking to be adopted. Two, there will be events that we've gone through before and questions that were raised. Shortly after my appearance here, we wrote back to the committee answering those questions. Because we were asked, against our wishes, to submit answers in writing. And we did so. We have not received any response from the committee saying the answers submitted were inadequate. So that's the second thing. Thirdly, on the issues raised by this committee, they all addressed in the strategic plan. We don't need any extra information. And we are ready right now to engage you on the issues of insolvency. And the Honourable Member Holm was saying the strategic plan, the budget has been tweaked precisely to address insolvency. So if the committee wants to ask specifically, have we addressed the structural deficiencies that led to procurement irregularities, the answer is yes. And we have all of the answers right here. And most of them are in the strategic plan, which the whole point of today's meeting is to engage in some reform on what is in this document. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Brigade Madison, your request as to how much time you would have sought to ask us to treat you differently from other Chapter 9 institutions. And we are not aware that the Constitution places one Chapter 9 institution above another. And also as Parliament, we have time constraints. We can't give you the whole day. But today, I'm prepared to say, next week, we will give you 3 hours. Go and prepare well and come and address us, because this committee takes the office of the public protector very seriously. We think it's a very important institution that has wide powers to assist government. We don't want to take decisions in a hurry. So we want to support you. We are giving you 3 hours next week to come and address us. Do you accept that offer or not?
I indicated to a person, my team and I have all of the answers if people have specific questions. But if the committee wants 3 hours, which we don't need, but if this committee wants 3 hours, we have to do that. And also, I have no thought to have special treatment. I engaged with the committee with the view of assisting. I didn't know what the arrangement was with the other Chapter 9 institutions. I was specific what had happened to me in 2 previous meetings. And I was trying to prevent that because we've now wasted an hour on the process.
Appreciated by your supporters of the DA, not by us, not the council.
I support the view that maybe we need to give the public protector much more time to present, but also in terms of the response we got, as indicated there, he said that responses to questions we are talking about now were sent to this committee. We need to follow up on that process. And may we actually get a report from you that will actually talk to those responses also. But at the same time, we will follow up on your allegation that the responses have been sent. so that by the next meeting when we sit, we have all those responses.
Yeah, I haven't seen the report, but you are right, Honorable Mayake. I think the committee secretary should find that correspondence, and we need to deal with it. Honorable Mpumulwana, then Honorable Olga.
Thank you, sir. I'm not sure why people try to include the public protector. Why should they protect the public protector? Anyway, all I was going to say, I think just fully accept that whatever you have said, when you're given more time, just do that. You don't need to say it's not important, nor to say it's unnecessary. I think with your respect, it would be better and more respectable for the committee to say, fine, rather than saying, talk like that. I don't think you should say wasting time. If I were you, I wouldn't defend that. I mean, thank you very much.
Honorable Sharks will be followed by Honorable Bredenbach and Honorable Rohan. Honorable Sharks is still speaking right. Honorable Stoller, you will follow Honorable Hall.
No, but thanks, Chair. I thought the line that we're leaving, we were about to say that we're closing the meeting and start preparing for next week. So we may be tempted to just open this meeting. But of course, in me, that maybe the colleagues, the staff, must be able to also give the public protector their analysis, you see. Analysis from the staff side on the issues that must be taken care of. But I think to further continue the meeting here, maybe just to make some kind of standing and also expose why he is supporting this much today, surprisingly. But I think we can close the meeting and prepare thoroughly, all of us, until next week, Wednesday. Thanks.
Honorable Bonga, I think that's very helpful of you. We will finish the public protector with an analysis by the office and any other additional information which we think or concerns which we think you should address. So this is all done to assist you because we want the office to succeed, because the success of your office is the success of our institution, and we want to just look at against anything that can propagate from our position. Honorable Sharks.
Sir, I'm totally opposed to the suggestion. Totally. Firstly, the suggestion that this meeting should be postponed. We've got an hour and a half left today. That's the first issue, where we could engage. And if there are further issues which are outstanding, the public protector could respond to. Why I say, as well, Chair, that they have already responded. We as a committee, and the WIP has said that we haven't seen their responses, their written responses. They've already responded in writing to the outstanding issues raised last year. The fault lies with us. Mm-hmm. Now you're asking the public protector to incur costs to fly down when they've got budget to construct again. Should we not continue with questioning now, Jay? And if there are issues which are outstanding, that they could respond in writing, as we've done with other institutions, that process will then save the public protector the costs of having to fly down again next week. Because, Chair, I'm concerned that the relationship between Parliament and the public protector needs some address.
You have made a proposal.
Yes.
And it's clear.
Yes.
You don't need to motivate.
Okay, Chair.
We'll consider the proposal. Can I allow others?
Absolutely, Chair. But my concern is, if we postpone it now, that costs a negative perception on the public protector.
And make that point.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Bridenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I align myself completely with Mr. Swart's suggestions, and I oppose any suggestion that this meeting doesn't carry on as it was intended to. You keep referring to we, Mr. Chair. We decide to be 3 hours, and we will respond to this meeting. I want to know who we is, because we have not been consulted, or is it the royal we? In the correspondence that the public protector is referring to about asking for transfer structure for the meeting, you clearly have seen it, because you accuse her of wanting special treatment. We haven't seen it, we being the committee. I would like to know why we haven't seen it and why we didn't discuss it and reach some consensus on it. And the fact that the written replies have not been seen by anybody, apparently also not by herself, is of a matter of enormous concern. We should have received it months ago, and when I say we, I mean the committee. And we should discuss this. And if we weren't happy, we should have engaged further. But to now suggest that this meeting should be postponed, I can't do this.
With respect, Honorable Redenbach and Fart, I myself suggested that I give the public protector 15 more minutes so that we can thereafter engage. Where does this thing come that I wanted to stop the meeting? I gave it 15 minutes, and because of the DA, now I mention you by name, because of you don't listen, you focus when other people are speaking, you didn't hear properly what was being said, and therefore you continue to talk and waste the time of these minutes. Public protector, I gave you 15 minutes. And we're not able to use it because of those friends. Well, you know,
I'm proceeding now, Honorable Chairperson, because as we indicated, we do have the answers. We do know, with due respect to Honorable Mbundwana, who says I was wrong in saying I don't need the extra time. I don't need the extra time, Honorable Mbundwana, because the CEO started to address this house, indicating the phone lines she's been picking, and she was indicating what she's been doing, and she even indicated it's been a tough time. So we do have the answers right here today. Let's give us the time to do that.
Let me assist you. I want to conclude this matter by saying that for this committee and this country, the office of the public protector is very, very important. And we have a responsibility to support that office. And therefore, where we think that your report is not adequate, we don't want to waste time discussing inadequate reports. We want to make an exception, give you time next week, Wednesday, to come back, and we will assist you by pointing out other things that you must address to make sure that we have a meaningful engagement. But to look at public protection, don't behave as a DA and then talk when I'm talking. We want to give you adequate time to address this committee because the work that you do is in the national interest. We don't want to have shortcuts. So we will reschedule next week, Wednesday, so that you come and give us a full report.
Just so you know, I will not be available next week. Next Wednesday, I have another meeting, so that members don't think that I have sent it to myself. But the Deputy Public Protector will be available, and the Chief Executive Officer, who is our accounting officer, will be available. Thank you for the
suggestion. The work of Parliament must take precedence over those engagements that we are talking about.
Chairperson, on a point of order, are you proposing now to adjourn the meeting? Are you proposing now to adjourn the meeting?
We have another meeting at
Are you proposing to adjourn this meeting?
No, there's a little time for this
meeting. No, it isn't. There's a quarter of an hour over.
Do you think it is going to change the situation?
I am saying, are you proposing to adjourn the meeting? Then I wish to oppose that motion, and I wish you to put it to the vote. Also, you notice, as Chairperson, that at the next meeting of this committee, I will move that this committee has no confidence in you.
But I just want to tell you that you are free to take any course of action. The bottom line here is I personally gave the
the public protector 15 more years to try and fill the case in her report. And she could not exercise that option because of the conduct of Honorable Horn and Honorable Now, I think what we are going to do is that we adjourn the meeting, and then we offer you an opportunity to come back and persuade this committee that you need more money. But if you are not available to come and persuade us, then we'll have to decide on a basis of the fact before us. And if the determination is not favorable, don't blame this committee for not taking you seriously, because we will take you so seriously that we are offering you more time to come back next week. And now this month we deal with the budget. We want to give you full attention. But if you don't want that attention, you are free to decline it.
We have allowed in the past other institutions where the head of the institution is not available to make presentations. And whilst I'm in a position, the adjournment of this meeting, I believe we've got enough time now, which we don't have in writing what their responses were already. I think it is even further unfair to say that we won't hear the public protector if she's not standing to speak. She's indicated that she has got it to overseas. And surely it is fair to allow her to have other representatives there that we can also, if this meeting, which I oppose, continues, Chair. So I see with you, to be fair, Chair, that we've got time now. Can we not continue now, Chair?
Okay, Matozala, I'm giving you 15 minutes that I promised. Can you address us?
Honourable Chairperson, as I indicated, the key questions that were asked by the chairperson right now, following on our last engagement, honourable members, related to the irregular expenditure that had been picked up by the Auditor General, and the Auditor General's remarks, which suggested that we could be technically insolvent. Let's start with the irregular expenditure. A lot of the irregular expenditure related to one issue, which I addressed this Parliament on orally at the time it came. I think we were talking about 4 million relating to the sourcing of consultants to be temporary investigators. So it was a once-off event, and I've never been to this Parliament. The Auditor General and I could not even agree on where that was irregular expenditure. And the Auditor General had agreed to go and review the finding on that particular issue. The key to that issue was the Auditor General said that we should have made sure that we got different quotations. We didn't get different quotations because we determined the price. And the price we determined was not market related. There were three ways of doing it. The first one was Section 217 of the Constitution, right, with the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act, right, with Treasury Regulations and the PMMA, is your product has to be competitive in order to make sure that you get the best possible available pricing on the market. And therefore, you will then go with the least costing, of course, provided the quality matches the price. In that particular case, we didn't have the money to go for competitive pricing. So option B, which was regulated by law, is then we go with treasury amount. So treasury has an hourly rate, so you engage people, and the only competition they have is for their professional competence. The money is already determined by treasury in terms of the hourly rate. Again, that was going to be too expensive for us. We then predetermined, we decided to price the project for ourselves, and determined that each project was going to cost that amount, and that's what we were red carded for. But that then has been corrected in that the CEO's presentation, I don't know, CEO, you could put up the slide again, where she said that she's going to be advertising, and I think the process is already going forward for a panel of legal experts. The is under investigation. So even though we did not agree with the Auditor General, but the Auditor General is the authority on the regularity of conduct in state affairs, we have then decided that we do that. Previously we had advertised and the people were on the panel, but we didn't appoint them as they entered at the time. We had advertised them. But what we had done, we then just put them on the program, and then as we needed them, we then would then appoint them. So that is corrected in so far as that specific future amount is concerned. Then some of it had to do with the question of procuring on the basis of a duplicate check certificate. Our own policy was silent on that. The generic policy of government is that you can't procure on duplicate, on copies of checks, PM certificates, and that has been corrected. But the CFO, I mean the CFO, will also talk about what the people have, and as we speak right now, we have somebody suspended already on the issues of procurement. But also we told Parliament that we have structural deficiencies in terms of the capacity of our finance and our procurement unit. We told this Parliament that we need more people, because our structure was funded on a experimental basis. As the organization grew, DPSA has said government should then review the structure and then refunded it. Hence the structure that was approved by this Parliament in 2010, the one with 298 people. So we talk about a structure that is not experimental. We're talking about a structure that was approved by this Parliament. Then it was subjected to quality assurance process by DPSA and then by Parliament. That structure includes making up our finances, our financial unit. We had a budget problem. We were talking about the possibility last year that we're going to be insolvent. Just start with the interim management team, the interim CEO and the interim CFO. He was the interim CFO. We picked up things that had not been budgeted for. Things that the Auditor General said, for example, the fact that my term ends next year, it doesn't mean that we should only start budgeting for my gratuity next year. He would have wanted us to budget it for it annually. Leave pay. Whether we're going to spend the money or we're not going to spend the money, we needed to budget for it. The other key measure we put, even before this new team, under the interim management team, austerity measures we put, and we shifted things and we put money into that budget. We rolled back our provincial offices or our regional offices until some. In fact, the CFO based the team at our last executive committee meeting, and he even said that we had underspent, and then we said, no, we didn't underspend, because that money we were told we need to put it aside. So when we're talking about insolvent, why is it insolvent? It was technical insolvency, because you have to put that money. We put aside money. As we speak now, we have rolled over funds from last year, because we didn't spend them, and we're not supposed to spend them. It was the winter money that the Auditor General would have wanted us to do. That started with the leadership of the CFO, the acting CFO, Mr. Zappi. But what he picked up was we had capacity challenges there in the finance section. And the new CFO now, Mr. Kapusa, has also picked up further challenges that we have. And one of the structural beefing up, honorable chairperson, is that we have put the little money that we have towards beefing up corporate services. He is now acting in two positions as he's sitting here. He's our chief financial officer and our head of corporate services, because we pick up weaknesses there at the level of pulling everything together in terms of corporate support and needed leadership. And in this short space of time, both of them have been here only since the 1st of March, and we insisted, coerced them, that they needed to be with us as we get into strategic plan, because our strategic plan, correctly so, had to address structural deficiencies in our own business processes as much as they had to address our core business in terms of investigation. And we've worked together to identify what are those structural deficiencies. And this strategic plan, the shifting of funding talk to that, and you'll see our budget item, for example, travel budget, a lot of money pulled back. Our regional office is closed. But I'm going to ask the CEO and the CFO to then talk to some of the other things that the Honourable Chairperson and members may have an interest in. As far as we're concerned, we are fully aware of what led us to where we were last year, and we have addressed it in our strategic plan. We will address it in our operational plan. Thank you. Over to you, CEO and CFO.
Thank you, Public Protector, and also thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm going to just comment on the actual, there are not questions here, but comments raised by the Chairperson, and that relate to some of the policies to be approved and specifically their regular expenditure. The reason why a regular expenditure might have been discussed, I assume that was because the annual report was tabled and there were certain audit queries that is usually processed in October, I believe. I am glad to say, first of all, that we have established very close cooperation with the Auditor General and that we have implemented the agreed action in the annual report to be taken in order to address the regular expenditure. As a result of that, and Mr. Kapoor will highlight our results, we had a budget deficit of approximately 26 million in the 13-14 financial year. We are glad to say that due to internal controls that is implemented and also the stringent measures respond to budget controls and realignment, we do not have any budget deficit apart from the 6,000 accounting deficit, which is necessary due to the leave provision to be made by any entity of the state. Chairperson, with regard to the IT policies and procedures, it's very important to look at the IT governance framework, and I'm glad to say that I have been in the privileged position to have approved those policies quite influential with the last month. So I'm 100% convinced that although your ITC infrastructure is extremely expensive, especially with regard to the kind of caseload management system that you need to carry with your institution, I believe that we have at least provided the necessary policy support and proceeds to align our institutional infrastructure to support the IT governance framework. With regard to the disciplinary action, yes, that's always very difficult, and I do believe that we have a zero tolerance, not only with regard to external activities that are linked to impropriety, but in this institution of ours, there is a zero tolerance policy now with regard to any unprofessional action with regard to procurement, and that led to quite a number of intense interventions from the executive side, to the sense that we now implement a very close oversight function ourselves in person and also the CFO to ensure that those processes are very securely followed. But due to the time constraints, let me give Mr. Kapoor an opportunity.
I think we are all happy now. We want the public protector to fill the gaps that we saw. There are still only two remaining gaps. And I want to give you an opportunity to go back and fill them in writing. One is on the question of the low morale of the staff. Number two is a comprehensive report that we requested of you, which has not yet reached us. And the final point I wish to make is that South Africans and ourselves respect the judiciary and all the judges. Some of us were taken aback to hear you addressing a public meeting saying that the judgment of Justice Skipper was a cut and paste judgment. And the effect of that is to say to the public that we have judges who are not competent to do the work. And I think you have taken a very good decision to say you are not satisfied with a judgment and that you will note an appeal. But why, in addition to that good judgment of yours, you go to the public and say the judge was just cutting and pasting, because now members of the public are then in future going to reject the evidence and say it's cut and paste. Is that not eroding the integrity of the judiciary? But you yourself, with respect to Advocate Melissa, you signed an affidavit. Later said what you signed was done in a hurry. It was oversight. And then you have two contradictory affidavits before the court. So can't we just agree that we respect your office and we want to continue doing so, but we expect you to respect the judiciary. If a judge makes a mistake, we are all free to note an appeal, but not to go on public platforms and campaign, because if that happens to you, you would not like it. Honorable members,
you are free to, and then I'll allow them.
You are welcome, seeing you for the first time in this meeting, and we are looking for...
Thank you very much.
Yes. No, you are most welcome. Okay, fine.
I'm willing to brief him about the business of the committee. To brief Honorable Shivambu about the business of the committee.
Collegial and solidarity, we need more of that in this meeting.
Yeah, no, as a student, the legal expert, I mean, I'm most welcome here, so we'll definitely use guidance on the nation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Members. Firstly, I think Judge Kibbis would really appreciate that Parliament or a member of Parliament is prepared to bring this issue into focus, even at a meeting like this, and that means we really respect the independence of the judiciary and would like to protect them, even if it's not the occasion for them. I wish I had the same protection when a member of the, when a staff member of Parliament wrote an article recently calling me Saint Tulima Donsela and accusing me of all manner of things. That having been said, in the same speech, I specifically indicated that I respect Judge Skiers. And about 5 days ago, Judge Skiers issued another judgment, which judgment I did not fully agree with, but I went again on the podium and sincerely thanked Judge Skiers and sincerely praised his judgment, which judgment I may not agree with, but I sincerely think it was an excellent judgment, and I would even urge members of the public to read it. In fact, I tweeted about it, but members of the public, please read Judge Skiers' judgment, an excellent and insightful judgment. And on the issue of cutting and pasting, there was context to that, and to the extent that it offended this Parliament, and I don't think it offended Judge Skiers, but if he was offended, I apologize. Not just to Judge Skiers, I apologize to other people who, on behalf of Judge Skiers, feel offended. And I reiterate again to this House that I have full respect for the judiciary. For Judge Davis himself, I have enormous respect. His large judgment was then taken. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I want to give the Honourable Members an opportunity to express themselves, and Honourable Swart, I can see you are happy that we are no longer postponing the meeting.
I'm grateful to that. Oh, sorry, you didn't recognize me.
No, I have, and then I just want to note the others. Yourself, Honorable Bonga, Honorable Stoller, Honorable Mungwana, Honorable Petenbach, and Honorable Majake, Honorable Horn, and I think that it would be fair to make Honorable Shibambu the Shipa.
Thank you, Chair. I'm grateful that you allowed...
authority before we proceed to say that are we reaching a situation where we're actually saying that we are now satisfied with the information provided to this committee to a point where we are in the position to engage in order for us to be in the position either to support the budget or not support the budget, because what was contentious was the fact that the committee felt that the information provided was too limited. Are we then reinforcing with the additional information that the public collector has given, we are now saying we are satisfied all the information that is necessary for this committee to actually manage to engage has been presented.
Honorable Majati, they say you can take a horse to the river, but you can't force it to drink. The public protector says she's satisfied that what she's presenting is enough. So it will be for the committee to make its own determination, which will then influence the attitude it takes to her proposal. So for our purposes today, she says she has given us all the information, and personally, I think that she still has to give us information on the morale of the staff and finish us with a comprehensive report which is not before us, and that she can send by post or email. So for the purposes of this discussion today, let's take it that they've given everything that they want to give us, and we leave it there. And engage. Honorable Sir.
No, Chair, I think reason has prevailed, and that we do, as we've done with others, to allow further written submissions, in particular to what the Honorable Bernard Darkey asked for lists of cases. We asked SIU yesterday for lists, which is an additional issue, and then to supplement and to find out what happened to those responses that were sent that we don't seem to have received in the October issues. So I think it is wise that we have allowed, as you did with others, the written submissions which will avoid next week's meeting, and we will then have, in my view, enough information to take a wise decision as to the budget and strategic plan. So thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. I think the best matter which I want to raise is that we have accidentally called by the public protector last time when they called about budgetary constraints. And the Minister of Finance was giving the budget. He did increase. We see some increase. But of concern, this increase that has been given does not, not properly told how is it going to be used, but instead the public protector wants more and more money. So it may be important that increase that is there is also used in a manner that it's able to avoid wanting more and more money. But another issue, Chair, is the issue of legal costs. They seem to be doing a lot of litigation and using a lot of senior counsels, and that is costly on its own, and it's a matter that may assist the public protector to reduce on the issues of spending. And the other issue that is there, which is not generally covered, and in this report change, it does not show exactly, not unless they will do that in the next meeting, where they will be showing us steps that they are taking to deal with the irregular expenditure that was raised by the procurement system that they are not following, because that's what the auditor general has said. It would be unthinkable that a board chair that must have a high standard of morale in terms of making sure that the public is safe and so on is the one that is getting irregular expenditures, procurement processes are not followed, but those are the issues they themselves are investigating, not the issue. So how do you get out of the process? Because it casts a doubt on the work that they're doing, on the work itself. other than that, what the CFO has said about zero tolerance is what we're going to monitor very closely. Very close that the zero tolerance does happen. But they have raised themselves a risk, but the prevalence management is a serious risk. But the turnaround as to how do they want to deal, how do they want to deal with that is not there, Jay. The matter that is not there. Critical matter which is at the center of their work is what they are not telling us about in the committee. The issue of the case management, the case load, how do we learn to manage these cases? Because that's what we're in the means of questions so that we can see how far are these cases now and so on. Because all we've seen is just a posturing in terms of certain cases. That's what we've seen. But all the other cases, we've then reflected the cases that are over these 9,000 that they've dealt with. But to what extent are these cases finalized and so on and so forth? And the other issue that we have raised very largely, which the strategic plan must speak to, and the HD must also speak to, is the issue that relates to the overlap. Because in the affidavit that you were speaking about, the public protector make an assertion that she has the right to include a matter in concurrence with any other state institution. While the spirit of the commission demands is that we need to deal with these overlaps in a progressive way, showing that we are actually one state. But you can't get go there and litigate that no, I'm continuing this matter, even if it is belonging to the Public Service Commission, but they're going to take it as it may. So that is the issue of duplication, and come to the committee and drive out fire funding and so on. Because the matter is a matter that you can quickly say, if the Public Service Commission is dealing with the matter, then you can see how you can give other support other than going to litigate on this such case. So those are the issues here that we're crying about generally, to say, this must be turned around in terms of how they budget. Don't want more money when you're given another man, but the man we've given you is not showing how you want to turn around. We have also spoken about the issue of the post and so on, how to deal with the structure, funding the structure. But those things are not taken care of, like business as usual in the Office of the Public Protector. So those are our concerns, General Chair, that how do we deal with this? How do we deal with these issues? And what's the practical things? Because we can't just listen to the same story every day. Because here, we're listening to the same story every day. Today, she comes and makes an example of a matter that is just a bit irrelevant. Spend 7 minutes thinking about a child from the university who did this and this. But those are not the issues that we want to deal with here. We want to deal with strict issues that relate to how do we deal with the constraint that's in the budget and how to make their work more easier. And all will see that the members of the DA will speak. No, the members of the DA. You see? So, Chair, those are the issues that I think, even if you can say this issue, an issue that you can't postpone. If you postpone next time you come, still we are going to raise the same issues. If the issues that we are going to raise, same and the same, next time, raise the same. So, at that point, we are going to say no, but we think we have a problem. The issue of insolvency, technical insolvency. To what extent have we dealt with that issue? And what are the turnaround plans?
Public Protector and the Deputy. I think the Honourable Member of Parliament is addressing you and you are in conversation. Then that's going to lead to misunderstandings and we're going to be going back to the same issues. Could we perhaps listen to one another? Proceed.
Chairperson,
I really don't know how this committee was. How does someone say the Public Protector behaving at the DA? I think that really must not have the partition today.
If you please. Honorable Shibambo. No, you have the right to come next. If you had raised your hand, I would have called him to order. But you didn't raise your hand timeously. So that's not acceptable. Proceed, Honorable Bo.
That is of contention, which is also, as an interest, the public has an interest on. this issue of the remedial powers and the remedial powers that the public prosecutor has, and to what extent has this thing impacted all the finalization of cases, and what are the 10 round times? And this thing causing a lot of litigation on its own. The public protector is doing a lot of work now in the litigation passing court than to be dealing with the issues that protecting the public in the main, because of these litigious cases that are so many. And the other issue that you have raised, Chuck, was that this consultant want to know and break down of this consultant, what are they doing? The consultant in the office break down what is happening, because they just, now they are coming with a new concept, want legal experts. Legal experts to go and investigate the cases. And the cases that also are not sure of, we don't know what is their status, where are they in terms of the level of these cases. So when we are requesting that information, then I doubt would we were wrong, and if we request that information, the public protector says no, I've gave you all the information. I think that is a matter that was able to deal with maybe another level, because our role here is to do oversight, and a proper oversight, and must know what is happening, and must give information that is sufficient. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to say to the public protector that, you know, we are in bad economic times in our country as we speak. So we need to do more with less. So when the committee asks for more information, is that they must be able to support what you are asking. Because it's going to be very difficult for your committee to come to the appropriation committee and say, this is the public protector, they need to be given extra so many rands, when they themselves cannot explain why you need the money. So I wanted you to take this in that spirit. That is one. Two, you know, if a civil servant or a clerk makes a statement, it does not have the same status as when the public protector of the Republic of South Africa makes it. So don't ever equate yourself with a civil servant. Your status demands that whatever you utter must be responsible at all times. It's not enough to say today Judge Kieber's cut and paste and tomorrow you stand and face. That's not what we need. We need you to be at all times responsible for whatever you answer. Because the public out there takes you seriously. If an ordinary person in the rural areas here, you see this judge is cut and paste, tomorrow they'll be saying, there's no justice in South Africa. Judges are catching this. So I'm repeating that. Please, abstain from making certain statements. Because I think the talking too much is actually our domain. We politicians. Yours to investigate and to protect the South African public. So I just want you to just reduce on that area. Thank you.
Protector, you don't mind, I take all the comments, note them, and then we can deal with all of them.
Sorry. Thank you. I think May next to me, your Honorable Lady next to me, has covered me to a certain extent in what you say. If I would suggest you will probably go to public and apologize. I know it is a very, very difficult thing, but it's an honorable thing. You are an advocate. you know very well you can never say anything bad about churches. And I think that if you don't understand that, it can have serious repercussions for you. Secondly, I would suggest, and for that I don't think you need to answer. I know you like to do so. Secondly, I think it is, if you could probably know what are better dates for you, rather than say, I won't be available. It is, I would suggest that the Office of the Public Protector, including Public Protector, if some of the questions you need personally, do put a date that or arrange. It is convenient for them, as well as convenient for the process of budget. In that way, who is supporting? But if you say, I'm not coming, I'm too busy, I got, then it is a different impression. I'm not sure if it is in the interest of the Office of the Public Protector. There are many other things that I hear that need some clarification there. There are quite a number of them. And I'll pay with you. Make some arrangement. We'll meet you, we'll see you sometime. Next week, if your plane is on Tuesday or whatever, and say, what can be done? Rather than say that, because I'll probably be reluctant to support your budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been covered by some of the colleagues in the committee, but I must say I'm a little taken aback at this personal attack on public protector, but be that as it may, I would like...
Can you raise your voice so we hear what you're saying? Can you see what you said?
I don't normally get people if you're not hearing what I'm saying. I said I'm a little taken aback at this personal attack. Nevertheless, I presume it's made in personal capacity and not on my part. I would like to receive Mr. Taylor's correspondence and the answers from the public protector, and I'd also like some indication as to what went wrong with the process as to why we didn't receive it, so that we can further engage and see if we need to ask more questions. And I must say I'm a little surprised, Mr. Chair, the request by this committee for information on cases when just yesterday, when we also informed similar information from the SIU, this committee held that was out of order and that information should be a secret. So why a public protector's information is different, I simply can't imagine. But nevertheless, with regard to questions to the public protector, it was raised that the lost interaction, as it might be said, the issue of donor funding. And that raised some concern in the committee. And if you could possibly just give a little more detail in that regard about those aspects, please. And the issue of litigation, you mentioned that you needed $10 million for litigation costs, and clearly there are matters that is in public interest for you to litigate. And that you needed the head of legal services. Can you just elaborate a little on that issue for me, please? Thank you.
Don't compare apples with oranges. The SIU situation is not comparable to the situation, and you know very well. Honorable Madaki?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm actually puzzled by a statement that Honourable Rickenbacher made to talk about personal attack of the public protector. I'm not aware that the committee is really attacking the public protector. Or are you trying to gain the favour of the public protector, Honourable Rickenbacher? As yourself said, you have started mentioning political parties today versus ANC.
You need to be better if you address me.
Honourable Majority, please answer that question directly. I'm not sure why we should want to have the favour of the public protector, because we're saying that they actually need to corruption. Let's become members of the committee. Let's engage the office of the public protector. Let's not grandstand. This is a very important office, and it's very highly respected, and you have heard public protector members concerned about the remarks that you made about Judge Sigurd's patent safety. And because of the importance of that office, that members comment the way they did, when you speak, the public listens. Because of this important institution that South Africa has actually put together to ensure that the Constitution is protected and the citizens of South Africa are properly protected. So basically for now, I don't understand why would the political party want to actually relay to you like they are your defenders in the sense of other political parties. What is the implication and what are we hoping to achieve with that kind of attitude? Let's not engage your office. Let's engage the report because the responsibility of this committee is actually have you coming to present to us what you want to have funded for this financial year that is beginning. And let's focus on it without really concerning at all. My concern would be what is still remaining that was requested in October for an office to submit. And I would actually want to urge the chairperson if that report is available somewhere. Let's really get that report so that we can engage on it and have it finalized so that it's not something that keeps on hanging. Because it's something that has been going on for a long time. By October when you came in, we had already indicated need for that kind of information previously in the House of Parliament. So by October it was almost like the follow-up. And maybe it's not true to say that some of these challenges are actually only coming up now. Fourth Parliament was quiet. Remember, the chairperson of the Fourth Parliament actually had a problem at the time you were actually saying that you don't actually account to the committee. Remember, that was at some point, that was something that was critical that this committee had to look at. And we engaged and debated robustly until we convinced you that you should actually look at your act. And your act has got provision that actually clearly articulates the fact that you report to this parliament. And that actually then borders on to issues of review of letters that pass from your office as to who is responsible to do the review. And part of the affidavits that they're actually thinking about has got to be the case that you yourself have actually indicated reviews of your letters can also be done by parliament. Parliament, you report to. You're requesting more money, CFO. And to I actually are leading to a report that was actually adopted by this committee previously. With the report that is coming, can you attach that report? Because we need to actually also engage on that report because every time your office comes here, you allude to this report that actually commits this, implicates this committee in terms of the approvals that have been made about 298 staff members that are supposed to be appointed by your office. Let's look at it so that we understand where the ARC committee was coming from, if ever there is a report of that nature, and whether that report is a report that is binding. Because from what I know, in terms of approval by Treasury, you have to actually motivate through the medium-term expenditure payment. Whatever money you require. And there isn't really something that can actually be approved for the future. We approve what is here for now. Because basically your approval is subject to the fiscal of the country. Honorable Shabana Fule has just indicated that your matter will have to later go to appropriations. Appropriations is the fiscal of the country. So whatever happens is, your requests are supposed to be in the context of what we got as some form of money that the country has got. And for now, the energy situation, we are applying austerity measures. And this is why when you look at a budget, and that budget is actually making projections that say the E&E is going up and up and up and up, you get worried whether people do not understand the situation, the financial situation the country is in, because we are all running the country together. And together we need to understand the vision of the country itself. Together we need to understand what the country can afford, what the country cannot afford. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I don't think we're getting anywhere by accusing fellow members of the committee of not in favour with the public protector, but I want to put on the record that what I think the opposition at large today fought for was a fair process, a fair treatment.
Honourable, you want to go on record as saying that people who are choosing or they're making their points, their observations, why should it be accusations?
Well, I think the Honourable Majaki certainly made the accusation that the opposition members want favour to cope with the Office of the Public Protector, and I think it should be said straight that what we are only looking for is a fair process. The fact that we are only now getting to engaging with the Public Protector on the presentation and have very limited time for that, I think it is a clear indication that this process has not been fair, and that was what our fight was about. But be that as it may, Chairperson, I have three questions to the Office of the Public Protector. The one is that in their presentation, it is mentioned that they will be aiming to roll out 48 mobile offices, but at the same time, the budgetary allowance for travel and subsistence was decreased substantially from 9.4 million to 2.1 million. And I just want an explanation as to how will they be able to roll out the mobile offices with a decreased provision for travel and subsistence. Then secondly, Chair, there's the issue of 70 trainee investigators in addition to the funded posts. But similarly, we see a decrease in the training budget from 2.1 million to 550,000 only. So just in terms of practicalities, that does not, to my mind, make complete sense. And lastly, Chair, I think while we as a committee maybe sometimes are critical, it's also important to note that in terms of matters finalized versus new matters, there's been 21,000 matters finalized and only just more than 15,000 new matters, which I think points or sketches a picture that the matters carried over in the new financial year is only 4,000, whilst in the prior financial year 9,500 matters, which clearly indicates effectiveness in terms of finalizing matters. However, the issue now is then as to the customer surveys that was previously envisaged to be conducted by the Office of the Public Protector, and we've had no feedback as to what the results are, and likewise in the 2015-16 performance plan we don't see anything regarding customer surveys, so we would maybe want as a committee some additional information on that. Thank you.
I'll tell the Honourable Hall that you agree now there is additional information that we need. Thank you very much for that contribution. Honourable Sword,
I'm grateful for the opportunity that you had to engage, and as I indicated earlier, I'm grateful to you, Chair, for the way forward that we are now embarking upon. And again, I'm sure the Public Protector and Chair, you emphasise the point that where there is, where you might want to amplify your responses in writing. Not the list of cases. I just wanted to ask a general question, and that is the relationship with the speakers in the speaker's office. We've got an office which supports Chapter 9 institutions, and how is that going? Clearly, I think we can improve our relationship between Parliament and Chapter 9 institutions. In my 16 years, there's been continual complaints from Chapter 9 institutions to the degree of meetings, the regularity, and I think that is the way that we can assist all Chapter 9 institutions that report to Parliament. Then I'd just like to ask you the impact of the surrounding litigation, and I relate into your powers and functions, whether that has impeded your work at all as the present interpretation of your powers, and we know it's subject to appeal. But has that had any impact on, I think Mr. Bonga asked, your turnaround time as well, whether there is, how that has impacted you? And then lastly, just your cooperation with the executive. In the past, we have had complaints from Chapter 9 institutions about the executive or State Department not responding quickly or implementing remedial actions, or whether
we can be of assistance in that regard. Thank you, Chair.
So thank you very much, Chair. Well, I'm late here because I was in the portfolio committee on trade in industry, and there was written decisions to take on the transfer pricing. So it's unrelated to what we are busy with here. But we had to come to the committee because the member who was a member of this committee on behalf of the EFF is no longer a member of parliament. Now, as the chief whip, I have the responsibility to make sure that the views of the EFF are expressed in all platforms. I think I agree with the last statement here, which is part of the presentation of the public protector, that let it never be said that indifference, self-interest, and expedience prevented us from building a formidable partnership against maladministration in all its forms, from indifference to corruption. The pursuit of the constitutional promise of an improved quality of life for all demands that we work as partners in ending maladministration by helping the people exert accountability in the exercise of their power and control over public resources. I think that is a very important principle that should guide all of us from all political parties. I don't get that from the ruling party. I think that the ruling party is, in an unsophisticated way, ganging up on the public protector, even on petty issues that people who come to parliament every day, even president and deputy president, always confront each other. But when they do that, the oversensitivity of them confront with each other on whatever thing is being said, it happens everywhere. What is the problem with the public protector and her deputy conferring on an issue which is being raised in the house, and a chairperson has to say no, don't talk to each other when someone else is speaking? It happens every day in Parliament. And what is wrong about that? The second issue is that it must not be in one name that the public protector is intimidated from not making their observations on judgments that have already been passed. We all do that. The law protects us to do that. If a judgment has been passed, you can make observations. The principle is that as members of parliament, as the executive, when there is an ongoing case, you can't make observations and comments because it is self-decay. You might influence the outcome. But once a judgment has been passed, you can make observations that I think this is correct. I think there can be a different interpretation of the same judgment. But now to say no, you can't do that, you can't say this, you can't say this. It means that people must just keep quiet, all of us must keep quiet. The judiciary must not be questioned. The judiciary is makes judgments every day with the ANC does that. That's a human question that criticizes the judiciary on judgments it doesn't agree with. He's a president who signs the appointment of those judges. The public protector does not do that. So what is wrong with the public protector making an observation about a judgment which, in her opinion, maybe was cut and paste or was not properly processed in terms of all those issues? There's nothing wrong, so there's no need to apologize. You can't accept an apology because there's no need to apologize for not doing anything. There's no rule you violated. When you criticize judgments that have happened elsewhere, there's no constitutional obligation that says that you can't speak when judgments have been passed. To come back to the point I started with is that we need to leave aside the childish and unsophisticated ways of cutting the public protector. We must entertain the deeper detail of what is here. So what is happening here is that they're giving up and everything else, you know, why are you doing this? Why are you talking to your deputy when we're talking? Where has that happened? We're not taking this process serious, and we need to protect the public protector, and I'm ashamed of doing so because she represents the hope of the people of South Africa, and the office has been very courageous in terms of dealing with the instances of corruption, even those that involve the President of the Republic. And that is why the ruling party is going all over and everything else and trying to establish an institution which we all have an obligation to protect. Thank you very much.
That all of us are entitled to their opinions, and we should continue expressing ourselves as freely as we like. Public Protector, before you answer, I just want to make one or two observations flowing from what the members have been saying. There was an observation by Honorable Bonga about escalating legal costs and litigation, which results from the dispute about your powers. I think the unfortunate remarks you made about Judge Skippers also had to do with the dispute about what your powers are or are not. And also, the law says that you should exercise your powers without fear or favor. But when a court hands down a judgment that in your view is incorrect, the question arises whether, unless you have a personal interest, whether the matter is not functus or fit you, whether you shouldn't let the matters lie, and those that have personal interest should then appeal or take further action. Why should it be myself who uses the limited budget to go and challenge the decisions of courts and things like that? Do you think that is advisable, and what is your view about this principle of factus officio? The other matter that is before the court, but which is in public domain and discussion, is a home affair matter, which shows that there are serious overlaps between your office and the Office of the Public Service Commission, which then reminds us that the overlaps that we dealt with last year still continue, and that is, there doesn't seem to be any attempt to address them. I think Honorable Pumulwana raised the question of the Forum of Chapter 9 institutions. I think it is disturbing to know that these Chapter 9 institutions have a forum in the Office of the Deputy Speaker, and we had suggested that they meet three times or quarterly to address the overheads. That has not happened, and that's why we are where we are today. So I think that we need to, I hope the Home Affairs case will settle this matter about the powers of the Public Protector, and also help us deal with the overlaps, because there's no doubt that the overlaps leads to this escalation of budget and so on and so on. But also there was an issue of whether the courts have the powers to review the decisions, where you said no, not only Parliament can do so. You refer matters to Parliament. But except the Uganda court, I've not seen any reports really from my office. So if in future you could favor us with your reports, so that we are able to engage, that would be helpful. And in conclusion, I can see that your office has the power to help resolve through mediation and things like that. And I think if you can exercise that power more, it would assist us not to have so many litigation, so much litigation, because to litigate, you also have to run to court, you must run to lawyers, you must pay money, government officials must leave their offices, they must be going to court, writing affidavits. So we can't run government through litigation. I think you made a very good suggestion, Public Protector, that the departments must have dispute resolution committees. I think think you should also do the same. Use dispute resolution other than litigation. Litigation is expensive and there's no money. You can't afford that. Thank you.
And thank you, Honorable Members. I am grateful that finally the spirit in the code that Honorable Jebambo read has prevailed, and we are able to find common ground bound by the Constitution and our common duty to eradicate improper conduct in state affairs. And the debt we owe to the people of South Africa for placing us in these positions of trust, understanding that we will not be persuaded by common interest, we are not going to be persuaded by friendship or enmity, we will discharge our responsibilities without fear. And let me just start with displaying some of the issues coming from the chairperson's thing. We don't litigate. We've never taken anyone to court, ever. We respond when a matter has been taken to court. So to suggest that we should use ADR instead of going to court, we stay anchored in the same vision that was approved by this Parliament in 2010. We would never be able to resolve 21,000 cases if we litigated. So the key focus in that office is early resolution. We trust the telephone conversations to try and see if we can resolve it over the phone. Roundtable discussions if we need to. And then ultimately reporting in the last resort. The case that I related when I started the conversation, and sorry to the Honorable Member who thinks I waited 7 minutes. I used that story because again I believed, hearing the quote made by Honorable Shivambo, that we're on the same page. If the Honorable Member who's living thinks that was a trivial matter, to me, as the top editor of South Africa, it's not a trivial matter. And to me, the 7 minutes was not a waste because it was meant to achieve common ground in terms of what really is the vision. And based on that vision, what is the great strategy that informs our work? And the rest becomes bigger. And I do apologize. So it was not the God that Honorable Chairperson resolved it telephonically. No writing. Even the writing came afterwards. Means that report to us for the interdict. We don't do that. Because the reason the people of South Africa invented the health protector is precisely that Honorable Chairperson, that an informal mechanism should be available to the people of South Africa to hold government accountable whenever they feel wronged, without resorting to litigation and ultimately without taking to the strip. So I just want to dispel that myth that we resort to litigation. We've never taken anyone to court, even when government has rejected the findings. We wait until somebody else takes government to court, and then we enter the frame, should we be a respondent? And I would ask this Parliament to take all of the litigation we've been involved in. We would like to act as a respondent. And I just want to firstly deal with the one of Judge Kepers. Initially, we decided we're not going to be part of it. And even though we acted as a respondent, only halfway through the litigation did we enter when that dealt with our powers. And unlike yourself, on a service, Judge Kepers himself thinks that our powers need to be resolved. That's what he said in his recent judgment, that the Supreme Court of Appeal needs to clarify what exactly are the powers of the public protector, because this important institution can't be in a position where people are not sure if it is in a position to resolve their complaints or not. Those are words of Judge Kepers in his judgment, which in my Twitter account I ask people to read it, and again urge people to read that judgment. And again, I do agree with you, Honorable Jefferson, we will not litigate lightly. We will only do it if need be. And the issue of our powers must be clarified. It's not about me. I'm in this office until October next year. And as Judge Kepers says again, that it's about clarifying the powers of this office as a constitutional body to inform even my successor. So it's not a personal life issue, it's an institutional issue about what is the role of this office. As our CEO already, she already has three mandates. We're not giving them, it's a legal issue. Our CEO already said we have the mandate to investigate. It's in the Constitution. We have the mandate to report, it's in the Constitution. We have the mandate to take appropriate legal action. Incidentally, Judge Fairfax also refers to my disagreement with him. In his judgment, he says that the public protector disagrees that the case of Brady defines the powers, saying that the powers of the public protector defined by the Constitution, the constitutional structure is different from the context within the case of Brady was decided. And again, having said that, I do apologize under the liberty to Judge Davis, and if somebody would feel better about me making that apology public, I'm more than happy, Honorable Schwartz, Honorable Shibango, I'm more than happy to do that. I respect the judiciary. I do agree though with Honorable Shibango that I not only have a right, I have a duty to disagree when I do. And as we have said to the judge in our claim, where we filed a contradictory affidavit, yes, through the oversight, which I have admitted, we have said that defining the powers of the public protector is a matter of law, not a personal issue. So ultimately, it's the law that determines what are the powers of this office, because I am not this office. I am the current incumbent, which pains me when a member of parliament says he might consider not supporting my budget if I don't come. Honourable members, we are here in positions of trust. We might dislike each other, and I hope we don't, because the way to dislike somebody is allowing them to wreak space in your head. But we might. If you choose to dislike me, it's your democratic right to do so. But always remember that when you're going to make a decision, it is about your responsibility. You hold a position of trust, and you hold it in good faith. So, don't not support this budget because I am not here. For that matter, I'm not even the accounting officer. The Public Protector Act and the Public Finance Management Act are very clear who is the accounting officer. It is the chief executive officer. In my part, as I've been asked by honorable members, I always make sure that I arrange my days to accommodate this committee. Even when this committee changed at the last minute, which it doesn't do to ministers, from 2 to 11, we make the necessary adjustments and rearrange our schedules so that we could be there. So yes, this committee is a priority, but good people, I am leaving this office next year, treat this office as a constitutional body. Whatever your personal issues with me, treat this office as a constitutional body. Don't betray your trust to the people of South Africa because you have personal issues. So I sit down with the issue of the Home Affairs case. Our vision remains the same. We don't litigate. So please don't accuse us of things that we don't do. Should we not litigate? I've already answered that and indicated that your chief herself does agree with us that this matter needs to be resolved so that the integrity of this office should be protected. And honorable members, one honorable member asked if our offices effectiveness has been affected, and I think it was Honorable Hall. Yes, sir. It has been affected. For the very first time after the SABC judgment, we had an organ of state that isn't even more that could respond to the 30-day period where all they're supposed to do is submit an implementation plan. And we didn't invent the methodology for implementation plans. It came from offices that are ombudsman offices. And say what you like. The Supreme Court of Appeal has already made a decision that the public protector is more than an ombudsman, which was obviously the right decision to make because an ombudsman investigates maladministration. So we have that function. And it's like a sixth of our work. Even the Public Protector Act itself, which is similar to ombudsman legislation, already gives us more responsibility than an ombudsman. Read Section 6 of the Public Protector Act. It talks about forms of improper conduct that may be investigated by the government. Maladministration is one of several forms. There's maladministration, there's improper and unlawful enrichment, there is corruption, the abuse of power, abuse of status as resources. The list is long, and no ombudsman in Mosque case conduct failure. Ombudsman officers, as the general, the German federal president said when he visited us now, they're meant to do with administrative justice. And even in this country, they're now looking at a structure similar to the public protector, which is more than an ombudsman. That's not me, sir. As matters, it is law of this country. Then I'm going to respond to a specific question. Honorable Ponga, who has left, I responded to the issue that you mentioned about the 7 minutes.
Yes, educated, attending the debate for the committee.
I'm sure that the law student, the third year law student, who wrote the text because of my intervention, would not agree with Honorable Ponga, with due respect. But also, I was bringing it to the committee because I thought that this committee would also be concerned about the fact that we investigate individual consent, but we also look at patterns of maladministration. And I was looking at a case that, for me, was supposed to bring us together in terms of how do we work with our protector. And maladministration there is that systemically, people's fees are not paid on time. And some end up leaving university. It's no trivial matter. If it was my son, I wouldn't want that to happen to you. But that was the reason I mentioned that, so I'm sorry to the Honourable. On the question of what are we doing with irregular expenditure, Honourable, I'm sorry that you're saying we're giving you more of the same. We have presented you a written strategic plan that is not more of the same. We have presented a verbal supplementary submission of the strategic plan that is not more of the same. I indicated to this committee what the circumstances were for the irregular expenditure. I indicated what happened, I indicated the compliance, the CFO augmented my answer. We even said that we're taking action against the senior manager, or we started disciplinary process against the senior manager who is responsible for facilities management. We rolled back our offices, which footprint was approved by this parliament, by the way. Our expansion footprint was approved by this parliament, but because of the services, for somebody now to accuse us of doing more of the same, it's difficult to appreciate. Because I don't know what else are we supposed to do. We hold back those provincial offices that we agreed to by this parliament, and we decided that there is no obligation. We're not going to implement them now. Hence, Honourable Horn will be putting money into the 48 mobile offices, and you've asked the relevant question around how we're going to fund them, because that increases S&T, that increases mileage on our cars, and things like that. And I'm going to ask our CFO to respond to that. About to be accused again by you chairperson that because there's a Home Affairs case, we are still dealing with public service matters. I would have wanted you to ask, sir, and would have explained to you, not to presume, sir. Because my team works hard. We have a triaging team that does this thing. And you must remember that when you're attacking me, you're attacking triaging officers in 20 offices. I don't do triaging. There's 20 offices of our protector with triaging officers that look at, does this belong to our mandate? If it does, are we the most suitable office? And we have a list. We defend here. One moment, okay. Wasn't the first time you asked us to tell how we do this thing. We sent a list to this parliament after, during the fourth parliament, on the triaging process, the graph and cases, because that list is available every week. It is sent across the board every week where it says this is what it received, and the triaging team is suggesting that we should take this as suggestions. Even now, at the press of the button, we can ask them to send the triaging list for last week.
It's part of the report you are actually indicating that it has been
sent. And it was sent, and it is not why.
Honorable Majaji and the public protector, the chairperson.
Right. Thank you, Honorable. Well, I thought I still had a floor, sir. But I was just saying that triaging list is not a secret. It's a list that is prepared by what we call assessment committees, and then it is sent every Friday to me. If I have a comment, I issue a comment. If I don't have a comment, and the other senior executives do revisit it, and then we don't take cases unless we have to take them. The Home Affairs case is an old matter. It's now being litigated because Home Affairs has taken us under review. We didn't. So people would check again with the papers before accusing us of things. It's Home Affairs that has taken us under review. We are a respondent. Because in court papers you can see who's the applicant and who is the respondent. Right. Honorable Bonga, I think I have answered your about how we manage cases. It's like we don't take a case unless we think it's necessary. In fact, the case of a whistleblower in one of the provinces that we sent to the Public Service Commission, and the Public Service Commission said it had no jurisdiction, it has now come back to us. 2 years down the line, she's asking us to investigate. Again, it had to be sent to the GHM committee, and the committee still needs to come back to us to say, can we help her this time? So again, let's think through this thing before we throw accusations. We do refer cases. What we said in our strategy, though, is that we want to refer more. We told the parliament that we're encouraged, not dispute resolution committees. We have encouraged cabinet, we wrote to cabinet in March, requesting that they should appoint an ombudsman-like structure in their own office that will work with us. That is what we encourage the firms to do the same. If it was Empire Building, we would never have written to Minister Sulu to ask them to establish a legal ombud.
We have answered all the questions.
Honorable Chairperson, can I... honourable members, we are trying to do more with listening. Honourable Toya accused us of not doing more with listening. This whole strategy, in terms of what it says, and we have shifted money, you can review the strategy. Tell us, honourable members, this is not using us. Read the strategy and see how we've shifted.
That was not a question.
Yes.
That's the advice. You are free to accept or reject.
Okay, but we are then saying, yes, we appreciate that it is a bad economy time. And the strategy is, though, in my own overview about doing more with little. And we don't just say it. We back it with action that to address the shifting of furniture because the money is not expanding. While they've asked for 200 million extra, we indicated, honourable members, that this budget that was submitted to you is based on money that has already been allocated. Then there was a question that was raised that we don't say what are we doing with the additional money. We said so. In this room this morning, we said the additional money that was given to us was only 15 million rand in terms of our baseline. Our baseline was expanded by only 1.5 million. That 1.5 million came with a tag. With a ring fence, honourable members. It said 8 million was for litigation, 7 million was for litigation, and 8 million was for training. So we told this parliament, this committee this morning, that we did exactly that. We had no option. And then with the litigation, in response to the question that is raised by several honourable members, including honourable Bond, it was our budget is escalating. We don't litigate, people litigate against us. But it is a fair concern about the litigation costs increasing. Has honourable members then decided, I think breaking up honourable breaking, but we then decided to create that legal services. Because we have our own person doing the work. For example, when Justice has issued his judgment, we tried to look for our lawyers for interpretation because I was busy with chairing a hearing. Now that we have our own legal services person, even though it's an interim, that person was able to read the judgment, analyze it, and advise us on what does it say. And you would note that people in public were saying we lost, but our own team was able to read the judgment and found that it's a judgment that affirms that office, that affirms the constitutional purpose, and that affirms the both arminians in terms of their right to have a mechanism that truly delivers justice for them. Yes.
I give you 15 minutes, you used 30 minutes, I allowed you, but I'm afraid you want to start again. I think you answered all the questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Again, thank you for this. We never disputed our accountability to Parliament, like ministers, president, it's written in the Constitution and the wording is the same. So it's not against the basis of whether we're accountable or not. We are accountable. We hold positions of trust. We are accountable, honorable members of this committee. How one of the little means not does not mean that you can review our decision because we're subject only to the constitution and the law. In the same way that you may not review a decision of the IEC, you may not, honorable Machade, review my decision. That's not me, that's the law.
Don't be agitated or you know, although I didn't see anybody intimidating, I want to agree with honorable Shivambo that nobody should intimidate you. But similarly, you shouldn't take members of parliament's comments as attacks on you or accusation. Because that sends an unfounded message to the public that members of parliament invite state organs here. When they come here, they are just attacked and accused. I don't think that's correct, because we agree that we must engage with you, and please don't regard engagement as attacks or accusations. But I want to thank you very much for addressing the questions honestly and openly. I can see that the unrest that I saw before on the side of the members of parliament is no longer there. It means they are happy with what you do. And I see the deputy want to speak. Normally I would not agree because your time is exhausted, but you haven't said anything, so I'll make an exception. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair. And honorable committee members, just a quick one for me. There's a question that wasn't dealt with, the issue of the interface between the speaker's office and of course the chapter 9. That's what I've done, Chair. For your indulgence, I sent Mr. Ramano and yourself a copy of the minutes of the meeting that the heads of the ISPs had on the 27th of February. In other words, where all the burning issues that are common to all the Chapter 9s, and of course, the other thing they object to all being called Chapter 9s, but some of them are not Chapter 9s. You know, the Public Service Commission, Financial Commission and so forth. So, but you see that a number of things were discussed there, such as the relations between us and the speaker. Of course, in terms of the public protector, we have a relationship in the sense that people always ultimately complain either to you or to the speaker about matters that they feel that are not moving. So we've got that interface going on and trying to find unity. And of course, there was also a very big unanimity on de-linking ISPs from the executive to enhance their independence. In other words, in terms of budgets, that budgets should not be too linked. For example, ours is linked to justice. So there was a common feature to say, look, there should be a way of asserting the independence of these ISPs. And of course, there was also a complaint that the bill on the remuneration of office bearers, that is the one that is trying to standardize the pay for the different institutions, is not moving as fast as would be desired. And then, of course, there was also a confirmation that there should be an interaction with the speaker's forum, so that the forum should have a slot and so forth. But then I think there may not, because I think people are running out of time. The issue of Chair.
Advocate, I think they would be agitated because we agreed that that forum should sit and favor us with the report of the deliberation so that we don't come here and waste time trying to receive the report from
us. Okay, so, but I send a report. What I asked Mr. Romano to do is disseminate it to the members. In other words, the minutes. But one burning issue is obviously never burning throughout the various platforms is the issue of implementation of reports. Not necessarily public protector, but of all the different ISPs. In other words, because people complain about...
just communicate with Mr. Arman, sort out this. We are not going to blame you for that because
yes,
we are not convinced of that conflict.
Yes.
I can take the matter up.
Okay.
And just the last thing, you know, this emphasis of independence, single mother. She has approached her office, and then she doesn't get satisfaction. And when we approach her office, we are told that we are independent, which means that Parliament is powerless to help the citizens because of independence. So maybe at another time, we must talk about the meaning of independence. Because if there are single mothers and orphans are crying because of independence, it can't be the genuine independence. So we will have to interrogate that. But thank you very much for clarifying. And I must apologize to the honorable members and all of you that you didn't even have lunch because of engagement, which is good because it shows you take the constitution and your work as serious and keep up that spirit. Honorable Shibambo.
I just wanted to recall that I hope you are not saying those things said on our behalf. You are saying it on our behalf. As the ANC and as don't involve us in those remarks, please. What you just said now about independence and all those things.
I said, Honorable Shibambo, in this meeting, we respect the fact that people have different opinions and all opinions have room. So if you have your different opinions...
But it must not go in the minute as if you said that on behalf of the committee. It must be on your own behalf.
Because you don't know the history of this committee and where we come from.
I know our government works very well. That's right.
Yeah,
all the cases that I took to court, I win against you. I'm saying that all you said now, all you said now is your personal opinion, is not our opinion as a committee.
Anyway, the majority of the members agree with
you. No.
So
it must be recorded as your opinion.
We have established a democratic republic. And in a democracy, we either have the decisions by consensus or by majority vote. So very unfortunate, you are a minority, and you are viewed as a minority.
There was no vote conducted to determine if what is said
about the agreement. Honorable Shibambo, for the problem with independence. Maybe we should be debating, but that's a different one. But now we are dealing with the report of the public protector. It has been really difficult to come to the conclusion of the report, and I think we have arrived at the conclusion. We will take note of the comments that are made by Honorable Shibambo about independence. We will need to debate it within the context of the Constitution of South Africa. Thank you very much.
I think I can invite you to prepare a discussion document on independence so there is free space to talk and dialogue. So don't worry, you are most welcome to this committee. You will find it a more democratic committee. All members, including the journalists, you are invited. I was sent to be generous. I'm told only members are invited to lunch in the next building. I don't know why other people have been supporting the democracy. I'm not invited. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, then. Thank you for that.
Oh, one of the...